If you sold somebody a loaded gun who you knew was in a vulnerable state and they shot themselves, I think it is murder. Just because you're using the internet doesn't mean you get away with murder.
I'm Damon Fairless, host of Hunting Warhead. This season, I take you inside the business of suicide and the places desperate people go when they can't find what they need in the real world. Hunting the Suicide Salesman. Available now wherever you get your podcasts.
I think that it'd be nice if more advertisers had a backbone and said, you know what, we actually think journalism is important in society and we want to put our brand next to journalism. But these days they want to be around fun stuff. They want to be around sports. Everything has been polarized and politicized. And for them, I think, you know, let's say running an ad on a news network could be perceived as being anti-Trump, right? Because the news is not typically positive for him. And so they don't want to alienate, you know, half the country. And so they just shy away from that. And I think that's problematic. It would be certainly easier for people to build robust journalism businesses if they could count on advertiser support.
I'm Jon Favreau, and you just heard from today's guest, Oliver Darcy, founder of the Status newsletter and former senior media reporter at CNN. For a while now, I've wanted to have a conversation with someone who can help make sense of the massive changes that are rapidly transforming the media landscape right now. Oliver's one of the best media reporters in the business, first at CNN's Reliable Sources and now at Status. He's become the go-to reporter for the Ellison-led takeover of CBS. He's the one who broke the news of Scott Pelley's confrontation with Barry Weiss that led to his firing at 60 Minutes. I invited Oliver on to talk about what's happening inside CBS, how journalists at CNN are reacting to the seemingly inevitable Ellison takeover there, and what the corporate consolidation of our media at large is doing to the industry and to the news we consume. We talked about all that and so much more, including Comcast's announcement that it's going to spin off NBC Universal, the latest MAGA media drama, and the future of independent news outlets like Oliver's and ours. We had a great conversation, and we'll get to it in a minute. But before we do, please consider becoming a subscriber to Friends of the Pod. Subscribers get access to ad-free episodes of their favorite crooked pods, including this one, special subscriber-only shows like Pod Save America Only Friends and Polar Coaster with Dan Pfeiffer. Plus, as we'll talk all about in this episode, it is the best way to support pro-democracy independent media, which is more important than ever right now. Head to crooked.com/friends to subscribe. All right, here's Oliver Darcy. Oliver, welcome to Offline.
I'm happy to be here. Excited.
So the last month or so might be one of the fastest, strangest periods of media consolidation, at least in my lifetime. The Justice Department just cleared a $111 billion deal that hands Warner Brothers Discovery, which includes CNN, to David Ellison, the billionaire who already owns CBS News. You spent 7 years at CNN, then left to build Status, which is now one of the go-to independent outlets covering the story. Big picture, before we get into it all, do you feel like you got out at the right time? Like you're watching your old industry from a lifeboat?
Yeah, I mean, when I was there, I felt like it was pretty rocky at times. You know, we had a new ownership under Warner Brothers Discovery, which certainly, I think, tamped down the very aggressive posture of CNN, against Trump that, you know, I was a part of. But now looking at it, it would be very difficult to cover the media industry inside one of the biggest stories of maybe our lifetimes in terms of media consolidation.
Yeah, I would imagine that's kind of tough to do as a media reporter.
I wouldn't want to work for Barry Weiss either. So, yeah. You know, if it was me inside and we just reported yesterday that Paula Reed, that CNN chief legal affairs analyst or correspondent, is exiting because she was uncomfortable with the merger. But I would be like with Kara Swisher and saying, you know what, if this happens, I'm out. I'm not taking editorial direction from Barry Weiss. That's ridiculous.
Yeah. And she's kind of already got her hands full. So you've argued that legacy media has basically lost its grip on the future. Give us the one paragraph, maybe two paragraph version of how we got here. Like, how did so much of American news end up in play all at the same moment?
When you say in play, do you mean in play to purchase?
Yes.
Or in... Well, I mean, it's always been in play to purchase. I mean, this goes back, a long time. I'm not a historian, but rich people have always bought newspapers and controlled the media, and this has been a tool of influence. I think
it does seem like we're getting a lot of mergers and consolidations and acquisitions, like all in the same couple years.
Yeah, I think what's disturbing is that we have an authoritarian wannabe in the Oval Office right now, and these institutions that are being purchased are supposed to hold him to account and speak truth to power. And instead, what's happening is you're seeing billionaires like Jeff Bezos or Patrick Soon-Shiong at the LA Times or David Ellison with Paramount, on and on it goes. But they're using these news organizations to curry favor with the White House. And so they don't want to see their actual news businesses do their jobs, at least do the jobs appropriately. They want to see them, flatter the president. And I think that's what's disturbing a lot of people. You were in the White House. Imagine if Barack Obama were in office saying that CNN needs to be sold to new ownership. And any deal that involves the parent company of CNN must overhaul the entire editorial. I mean, that's what's happening now. It's crazy. And what's alarming is these billionaires are, instead of saying that's wrong, Mr. President, we're not going to do that, they are playing to him. They're saying, okay, we'll do it. David Ellison said on the record, he has had great conversations with Donald Trump about CNN. And the only good conversations you have with Donald Trump about CNN is about blowing up the whole editorial process there.
I believe we moved Fox News back one row in the White House briefing room and generated an uproar for doing that. So yeah, it would be different. It would be different. So that's on the political side, and that's all true. It also seems like on the business side, there is just this sort of era of consolidation. And I don't know if this is just, this is just a cycle. Things get bundled and then they get unbundled and then they get bundled again or what. But it does seem like just from a business industry side that we are getting just fewer and fewer really big media companies that are sort of gobbling each other up.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I think there's two prongs to this. Like, these news organizations and media organizations are facing tremendous political pressure right now, but their business models are under tremendous pressure simultaneously.
Right.
And so big tech, and it gets a little confusing, but big tech has really gobbled up all the advertising dollars, and they have really upended the traditional models for these companies, whether they're entertainment companies with streaming or whether they're digital ad business or digital publishers that rely on ad businesses. Big tech has totally torpedoed their business models. And so they are extremely weak right now. And for them, in their eyes, the only thing they can do to compete with these tech companies is to achieve more scale and to get bigger so they have a little more leverage with advertisers or with consumers to compete. And so I think that's why you're seeing, Paramount could never survive on its own. It can't compete with Netflix. So they were like, okay, so we can buy Warner Brothers Discovery, the parent company of HBO and TNT and CNN, and maybe that will give us a little more scale to compete against a Netflix or an Amazon Prime, et cetera. And I think in the same way with digital publishers, you've seen a similar bundling, and they're trying to also figure out, how do we compete against YouTube? That's it's a very big competitor. And right now, if you're a small business, you're no longer going to your local paper or news organization to advertise. You're going to Facebook or YouTube. And that's the lifeblood for these media organizations. And so that's another reason you're seeing them pivot to subscriptions, because at least maybe they can have a direct relationship with their audience to support some of the journalism. But that's not anywhere near the revenue that the advertising community can provide.
So let's start with CBS because it's the most glaring example of new ownership dramatically changing a legacy media outlet. Last October, Ellison bought Barry Weiss's The Free Press for a reported $150 million, folded it into CBS News, made her editor-in-chief, reporting straight to him. The pitch being that she understood the internet in a way legacy TV people didn't. How is that move working out right now? What's
not
the latest?
Very well.
What's the latest with CBS?
They are collapsing on every front. So the CBS Evening News has hit historic low ratings. They struggle now to get 4 million viewers on the evening news, which is would have been unthinkable, even a year ago. The CBS Morning Show with Gayle King has hit all-time low ratings. Like, they are on pace to have posted their worst June of all time. They posted their worst May of all time in the ratings. Obviously, 60 Minutes is no longer, you know, no longer resembles what we know 60 Minutes to be. Anderson Cooper's gone. Cecilia Vega's gone. Sharon Alfonsi's gone. Scott Pelley's gone. The executive producer is gone. The executive editor is gone. That show is no longer what it once was. It carries the name forward, but that's probably about it at this point. And so, like, the three programs you would really judge Barry Weiss on, I mean, CBS News is not a cable channel with 24 hours of programming. It's really three shows, four shows. Those three main shows are all in turmoil. And so if you just judged her based on the results, they're not very good. And you would judge based on ratings because that equals advertising revenue. And I must say, John, the idea that Barry Weiss is a digital guru also never really added up to me. I mean, look at their YouTube numbers on the Free Press. Like, they're not tremendous YouTube numbers. And, you know, there's a lot of money that's flowed into the Free Press from these billionaires at Sun Valley, you know. They've got a lot of investment money. I think they had, like, a million subscribers or something like that. It's not super impressive, I'd say, given the amount of investment that's gone into this company.
Obviously, there's been pressure on ratings at NBC News, ABC News as well. But is the decline in CBS's ratings, like, much worse than ABC and NBC over the same period?
In fact, in some cases, ABC and NBC are gaining viewers while CBS is losing viewers.
Interesting.
Which suggests to us, because it's not like there are more people watching linear television today than there were yesterday. That's not what's happening. The pie is not growing. It's shrinking on TV. So the thing that makes sense there is that CBS News viewers are actively changing the channel and choosing to watch, let's say, David Muir or Tom Yamas versus Tony DeCoppola.
Yeah. So here's what I'm wondering about Barry Weiss is we hear about sort of the firings or people getting pushed out or sort of the potential editorial interference. Like, has she, is there any concrete examples of a change she's made that's actually moving CBS towards becoming a more modern digital first news organization, a product, a hire, a format? Like, what else has she been doing besides what we see her in the headlines for?
I'm not sure. I mean, honestly, I couldn't tell you. I think this is the problem for her, is that she doesn't have any obvious wins under her belt. She wants to do a big interview. We reported that she wants to do The Daily on the New York Times, and she's being advised against it by people close to her. And my guess would be, if you're a PR professional, a communications official, you'd say, we don't want to go to press unless we have, like, three clear wins, right? You don't want to do a big interview and be on the defense. You want to have some things to tout, right? And honestly, there really isn't much. Like, I mean, a lot of the people she's tried to hire, she's been unable to court. She's, you know, there's not, like, some grand digital series that she's launched. You know, one of the things that she could have done is left the television shows the same and say, you know what, they're working, I'm not really going to mess with those, but we're going to expand on digital, and I'm going to launch these, like, five podcasts, let's just say, and see how those do. It's not like we've seen that. And so I don't know. I mean, I think this is a problem. I mean, she's going to be a year in to the job later this year, and I don't see an obvious win.
We're about a month out from the 60 Minutes debacle. I saw Dylan Byers' report the other day that, according to some anonymous CBS News employees, it's not as bad as the press is making it out to be there. What is your reporting tell you about how things feel in CBS News right now?
I'd say, John, the general rule of thumb in any reporting is it's always 100 times worse behind the scenes than what makes its way to the press.
That is usually true, yeah.
That's usually the way it is, right? Yeah. It usually gets watered down by the time it makes its way into the press. I very much remember that being the case when I was at CNN, and there was turmoil back then. My understanding is it's really bad behind the scenes at 60 Minutes. Like, their morale is at all-time lows. They are still concerned whether they can make air in an appropriate way by the fall. Like, the show is never been this far off course this late into the summer. I mean, it seems like it's early in the summer. It's July, but they're already usually banking stories. They have the story assignments handed down to the correspondents. The correspondents have, you know, started figuring out when they're going to shoot. These 60-minute stories, they're lengthy pieces, and they're heavily vetted. It's like doing a New Yorker story in print. takes a lot of time. It's not like you can turn this around in 2 days. And so people inside are very worried. And we're still seeing people leave 60 Minutes every week. Senior producers, people who have been there for decades. And so it's bad inside there. And that's not even counting the morale. You have to keep in mind that if you work at a program, I mean, I'm only 35, okay? Some people have worked at 60 Minutes longer than I've been alive.
Yeah.
They've watched their colleagues get married. They've watched their colleagues have kids. They know their kids. They go to war. Literally, they've gone to war zones with these people, okay? And Barry Weiss comes in and just fires people and causes mass chaos without even so much as going to the team to explain what's going on. So you can imagine it's like a family being torn apart at the seams by someone in some secure facility across the street. And they're heartbroken, they're angry, and it's hard to focus on work. So I don't know why anyone would say it's not as bad as it has been portrayed in the press. I read a lot of the press, it's my job. I think a lot of the press has been deferential to Barry Weiss and saying things like, yeah, well, you know, the show was good on linear, but it needs to improve on digital, even though Paramount was just bragging about how good it was doing on digital like 2 weeks before Barry Weiss blew it up. But it's bad inside. That's the short answer.
Offline is brought to you by Remy. I always grind my teeth when I am sleeping, and sometimes I wake up and my jaw's hurting.
It's the worst.
My head is hurting, and I realize it is time to get a night guard, and then heard about Remy through Tommy here.
I've been using Remy for years, years and years before they were a sponsor of any of the shows here.
And I just got the package, so I'm about to start using it. And Remy night guards are the only FDA cleared and clinically tested at-home impression kit night guards on the market. Not only do they help prevent teeth damage from grinding, they also help reduce jaw tension and facial muscle strain and improve your sleep quality. You'll get the same professional quality and comfort as a night guard from the dentist for 80% less of the cost by taking your own impression from the convenience of your home. Remy saves your impression so you can enjoy the convenience and savings of Remy Club, where they'll ship a new top and bottom night guard to you every 6 months. Here's how it works. After purchase, your impression kit comes straight to your door. Follow Remy's step-by-step instructions to get your perfect impression. That's where I am right now. Remy crafts and ships you your custom fit night guard. Get your night guard back and start protecting your teeth. Protect your teeth with Remy by using code OFF to get 55% off your new night guard from now until the end of August with Remy Club Subscribe and Save. That's 55% off at shopremi.com/off with code OFF. Thank you, Remy. Offline is brought to you by Quince. Summer days are always a little more relaxed, so when I open my closet, I find myself reaching for the same comfortable go-anywhere pieces again and again. That's why I keep coming back to Quince. They focus on well-made essentials that naturally become those everyday staples you live in all season long. Quince's 100% European linen pants and shirts are breathable, easy to throw on, and the summer upgrade your rotation needs starting at just $34. Their tees are so soft you'll never want to take them off, and the lightweight cotton sweaters are exactly what you want when summer nights cool down. Everything at Quince is priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They work directly with ethical factories and cut out the middlemen, so you're paying for exceptional quality, not brand markup. Just got one of their lightweight cotton sweaters because, you know, it gets a little cool at night here in LA. Needed some of those. Excited about that. And I bought a couple t-shirts as well. Mark your summer wardrobe easier. Go to quince.com/offline for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada too. That's quince.com/offline for free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/offline. So now Ellison is about to do all of it again with your old network, CNN. He said CNN's editorial independence will, quote, absolutely be maintained, that he wants to be in the truth business. Given everything you just described at CBS, do you buy that? And what would you say about CNN's fate? Where do you see this headed?
Well, David Ellison said that CBS News' editorial independence was going to be protected, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
And then he installed Barry Weiss, who has totally upended that entire network and pushed the network into a pro-MAGA direction. So, you know, actions speak a lot louder than words, and everything that we've seen happen at CBS News would certainly give you a lot of pause and a lot of room for doubt in what David Ellison is saying. We also have reporting not only from us, but look at what the Wall Street Journal, Rupert Murdoch's outlet has reported that the Ellisons have promised sweeping changes to Donald Trump. There's a reason that Donald Trump is out there literally praising the Ellisons, right? He's saying they're great guys. He's ringside with David Ellison at the UFC fight. He's praising this guy. And we know that the only thing that Donald Trump cares about in this deal is CNN. He doesn't care about, like, the next season of Landman on Paramount Plus, right? Like, he's not watching Game of Thrones or House of the Dragon on HBO. He doesn't care about that stuff. He cares about CNN and CBS News, and really only 60 Minutes on CBS News. So the fact that he's praising the Ellisons and has blessed this deal, reportedly, you know, the senior DOJ officials overrode career prosecutors who wanted to pause this deal or at least challenge the deal. The fact that Donald Trump has blessed this deal suggests to me that he is hearing things behind the scenes that he likes a lot. Mm-hmm. And those things would be about CNN. And the only thing that Donald Trump wants from CNN, he doesn't want them to be in the truth business. That's ridiculous. He wants them to bow down before his feet and to stop being aggressive and challenging what he's doing. So David Ellison can say whatever he wants, but he's the guy also hosting dinners honoring Trump on First Amendment grounds. So I don't put much stock into what he's saying.
I guess potentially the most optimistic scenario is Ellison says all that to make sure that the deal goes through, and once it's through and he doesn't need Trump to bless any deals anymore, then he can sort of leave CNN to do what it wants mostly. But I don't
know. That's super optimistic. I also think there's something with Larry Ellison. Larry Ellison is, you know, the Oracle billionaire who owns his own Hawaiian island. Interesting guy. He, according to the Washington Post, participated in an election denialism call after the 2020 election.
He's
a pretty MAGA guy, I'd say, right?
Yeah.
And so I don't think he's going to want to be on the golf course with his MAGA buddies, owning CNN, which is going to be considered a liberal organization. I don't think he's going to like that very much. It's similar to the way John Malone had no official role in CNN with Warner Brothers Discovery, but certainly it has an outsized influence on what happens. And so it's Larry Ellison's money. Just follow the money. This guy is a supporter of Donald Trump. He apparently is an election denialist. We've asked him for comment, by the way. Do you still believe the 2020 election was stolen? He won't say it one way or another. And this is the guy that's going to own CNN. And by the way, he's going to own CNN apparently with the Saudis, the Qataris, and the Emiratis, which is also crazy.
So I'm curious as how this is all playing out inside CNN. Some CNN journalists, Anderson Cooper chief among them, have reportedly balked at working for Barry Weiss. Paula Reed, you mentioned, is leaving. Do you think there's a mass exodus coming? And what does that look like? What are you guys hearing about what's going on inside CNN?
It's really bad inside CNN, I'd say. I think, you know, I talk to a lot of people there frequently, and they have been closely watching what's happening at CBS in horror. They are very alarmed by what's going on there. They prefer that David Ellison is not the owner of CNN. Look, I think it's always tricky when something like this happens. There are people who have to pay mortgages. There are people that just kind of put their head down and do what they're told and try their best to ignore the drama. But I think the people, you know, the journalists there who have their faces on these stories, I do think that some of them are going to be leaving. And we've heard Kara Swisher very loudly say she will never work for the Ellisons. But someone like Paula Reed, you know, no one was thinking she was going to be exiting the network over concerns about this merger until we reported it this week. And so I think there are going to be a lot more people who have opportunities elsewhere that are going to say, you know what, it's not for me. And it depends on who's going to be in charge. We still don't know who's going to be in charge of CNN. Now, if David Ellison leaves, let's say, Mark Thompson, the current chief executive there, in charge of CNN, and Mark Thompson, you know, protects the editorial independence of CNN and doesn't let Barry Weiss in, I think someone like Anderson Cooper might be comfortable staying. Mm. But Anderson Cooper left his much-loved gig as a 60 Minutes correspondent after almost two decades working at that show because he was not happy with Barry Weiss. He didn't want to be under her editorial purview. And so I have a hard time thinking that Anderson Cooper is going to take any editorial direction from someone like Barry Weiss. And if push comes to shove, does he really need that job? It's not like he's hurting for money.
Yeah. Let's talk about the other recent media move, also a pretty big deal. Comcast announced it's splitting itself in two. It's spinning off NBC Universal and Sky from the broadband and tech business into a separate company, on top of already carving its cable channels out into their own spinoff, Versant, which it did last year. What do you think a move like that right now says about how these media giants see the future of news?
Well, they don't care about the future of news. I think that's the short answer.
Yeah.
I think that in many cases, particularly from Comcast, news has been a problem for them. Brian Roberts has, you know, felt the ire of Donald Trump. Brian Roberts is the head of Comcast and the Robert Chairman that controls Comcast. He's felt the ire of Donald Trump, not for anything Comcast is doing on the broadband front, but because of MS Now and because of NBC News. And Donald Trump is constantly posting on True Social that Brian Roberts is a lowlife because of that. And so I think that Brian Roberts is happy to spin off these news organizations and move them far away from the broadband business because it's just a problem in this regulatory environment with Donald Trump as president. I also think that their focus, I mean, news companies are very high profile, but they're not money makers. Like for Brian Roberts, the thing that's making money is the cable and internet business. And, you know, they're facing significant challenges there. So in terms of Comcast, it's a little more complicated, I think. But he wants to separate that business from the media business so that he can maybe do some mergers or acquisitions on the broadband business and the media business can do its own thing. But at the end of the day, you know, do billionaires care about the news? I think increasingly we're seeing, and I think it's alarming given how important it is for society, but increasingly we're seeing that they just don't care about the news.
Yeah.
And they care about their business interests a lot more.
Well, it made me wonder because early speculation has centered on Netflix as a potential buyer for NBC Universal down the road. Though the question is, as we just talked about with Brian Roberts, whether Ted Sarandos, who runs Netflix, wants all the legal and political drama that comes with owning a broadcast news network. I also saw other speculation in the New York Times that Amazon could be a potential buyer. But then there was a dystopian sentence or two that said, but they might not want to get all that money out the door that they need for data centers. what do you think in terms of who might buy NBC Universal or whether it just might, you know, stand alone?
I think that if Netflix were interested in it, they'd probably be interested in the theme park business and the movie studio, but I'm not sure they would want to deal with owning NBC News and being in the news business or owning even the linear channel because, you know, they're a streaming company. They've been very future forward. And the linear channel, the broadcast channel, while it has NFL rights and NBA rights, I just don't know if they want to be in that business. That's not their business. So
what happens? People at NBC News must have looked at this announcement.
I mean, I got messages from people at NBC News asking what it means. And I think that the answer right now is we don't know what it means for NBC News. It's difficult to divorce NBC News from NBC, the broadcast channel. So I think that might be at least kind of good for the NBC News folks because people, you know, might want the broadcast channel because of those NFL and NBA rights and other sports rights. The Olympics obviously are on NBC and have been on NBC for a long time. But I don't know. I think the problem for a lot of news companies is that they're not the prized asset and they're actually the problem asset for these either companies or billionaires who want to take over.
What do you think all this media, this era of media consolidation, how do you think this affects people who, want jobs in media, who have jobs in media, and then people who, the rest of us, who consume media, who consume news?
Well, I think it's worrisome. I mean, I think it's really worrisome that someone like David Ellison can control the information environment the way he's about to. I mean, he's, you know, they have a stake in TikTok. They're going to own...
Oh, yeah, I forgot about TikTok.
Yeah, they're going to own two of the big movie studios, Warner Brothers and Paramount Pictures. They're going to own two of the big news organizations, CBS News and CNN. They're going to own channels like HBO, networks like TNT and TBS, and the Cartoon Network and the Golf Channel. I mean, they're going to control a significant amount of information that you consume and entertainment that you consume. And you can certainly push an agenda with both of those. And I think that's alarming. And then you think about, well, who else is there controlling the news? You got Rupert Murdoch. I don't know if you want to, I want him safeguarding democracy. And you got the Sulzbergers with the New York Times, and then you got Jeff Bezos with the Washington Post. I mean, it's not really great when those are the people who are supposed to be the bulwarks against an authoritarian government. And we've seen, you know, it's strange. We're totally living in the Twilight Zone that Rupert Murdoch, of all those people, has pushed back the hardest against Donald Trump. And has like said, you know what? We're not going to settle this Wall Street Journal lawsuit. We're going to take you to court. Like, it's a strange time to be alive. But I feel like it's very disturbing seeing who's owning and controlling how we absorb information these days. And then you also have the tech billionaires we haven't talked about, but Mark Zuckerberg, who has just totally bent the knee and kissed Donald Trump at the feet to keep his business alive, and the AI billionaires, you know, the bros who are just happy for Donald Trump to clear regulatory hurdles for themselves. So, like, how does it affect everyone? Well, everything you consume, whether through the AI bots, whether through Google and YouTube, whether through HBO and CNN, the New York Times, like, there aren't that many people controlling what you're consuming. And a lot of these people, the majority of these people, are happy to kowtow to power if it means safeguarding their overall business interests.
What do you think they do? Like, do you think they're thinking about what happens after Donald Trump leaves and they have invested all this time and money and flattery in making sure that they can be close enough to Donald Trump, or at least not piss him off enough so that they can pursue their business goals? Like, is there any thinking inside some of these media companies that, like, he's going to be gone at some point and there could be a Democrat in the White House, and then what are we going to do?
There should be. I mean, there really should be. Typically, CEOs have always thought about how the political winds change in Washington. I do wonder, though, whether they think Donald Trump's a different animal, and if a Democrat gets elected, they're certainly not going to use the government for retribution in the same way that Donald Trump is, and so we'll be fine. Maybe that's what they're thinking. I don't know, and I actually wonder if that's a miscalculation, because, as you know, you're seeing a groundswell right now of people saying, no, I want David Ellison dragged before Congress. I want this whole company broken up. Elizabeth Warren's talking about it. Like, she's just sent out a pretty clear warning saying, if this gets approved right now, wait till we take back control over Washington. So maybe they're thinking they'll be fine, and maybe that will be the case, because I do think Democrats are not, they're at least right now, they're not in the state talking about, like, you know, weaponizing the Justice Department and directing the Justice Department to block deals that they don't like, or to break up companies they don't like. But I do think they're going to face some scrutiny, and it's going to be problematic the way they've conducted themselves over the past couple years.
Oof. And you know what? Like, I don't even think Democrats need to be talking about weaponizing the Justice Department, because I don't think it is weaponizing the Justice Department to just say Donald Trump did a bunch of dirty, corrupt deals and we get power, we're going to undo them. That's it.
I don't disagree with you. But the problem is, I think that, like, we're living in a world where that will be portrayed as weaponizing, and half the country will believe it.
Yep.
And they'll say and then they'll get back in office and say, well, the Democrats did this, so now we're going
to
do this.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the DOJ. Like, what do you do if you have all these partisans installed? Does a Democrat come in and clean house and get rid of these people? And if they do, then there's this weird precedent where it's like, okay, the new guy comes in and they clean house. And so it's just a normalized thing, and the whole system is just politicized.
Yeah. No, it needs you can't just keep swinging back and forth. At some point, you need to pass some, like, real structural reforms if you're going to want to stop the cycle. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Not everyone experiences summer as an endless parade of hot dogs, vacations, and pool parties. For some people, life's woes won't abate when the temperature climbs and the days get longer. If you've got the summertime blues or are simply feeling overwhelmed, BetterHelp is there when you need it. With over 30,000 therapists, BetterHelp is the world's largest online therapy platform, having served over 6 million people globally. And it works. With an average rating of 4.9 out of 5 for a live session based on over 1.7 million client reviews. BetterHelp therapists work according to a strict code of conduct and are fully licensed in the U.S. BetterHelp does the initial matching work for you so you can focus on your therapy goals. A short questionnaire helps identify your needs and preferences. If you aren't happy with your match, switch to a different therapist at any time from their tailored recs. Look, everyone needs therapy. Everyone could use therapy, even if you don't think so. It's always good to talk to someone. There's a lot going on in the world. I'm sure there's a lot going on in your life. And BetterHelp makes it easy. You can just try it from the comfort of your home. You can do it online. You don't have to say yes to everything this summer. Find support in therapy. Sign up and get 10% off at betterhelp.com/offline. That's betterhelp.com/offline.
In moments like these, it's easy to feel overwhelmed and even easier to feel powerless. But we are neither. I'm Stacey Abrams, and on my podcast, Assembly Required, I take on each executive action, legislative battle, and breaking news moment by asking three questions. What's really happening? What can we do about it? And how do we keep going together? This is a space for clarity, strategy, and hope rooted in action. Not denial. New episodes of Assembly Required drop Tuesdays. Tune in wherever you get your podcasts and on YouTube.
I do want to ask about how these transformations are playing out in right-wing media. Some of their stars who've gone independent, Tucker Carlson, Megyn Kelly, Candace Owens, have openly broke with Trump over the Iran war. Tucker just mocked the president's bragging about ending the war. He said, "Shut up, bitch. I don't take you seriously." Says that he's leaving the Republican Party. What do you think it means that the rights information ecosystem is no longer marching in lockstep with Trump?
I think it means they sense some weakness and they are realizing that Donald Trump is no longer going to be the center of gravity in 2 years and 3 years. And they also, I think, have their finger on the pulse. I think Donald Trump's actually lost pulse of his own movement to some extent. Mm. And someone like Tucker very much understands that people voted for Donald Trump for a few reasons. One of them was like no new wars, right?
Yep.
And he has just brazenly broken that agreement that he had with the American people on that. And I think Tucker realizes that, you know, Donald Trump's not going to be here forever. And he's a smart guy. I mean, this is the guy, like, I'm sure he actually, I think Tucker actually does not like foreign wars. I think that's something he actually believes in, one of the few things maybe. Mm. But he's also a guy who is trashing Donald Trump in 2020, right? You know, we saw those Dominion texts where he said, "I hate this guy," with like a passion, right? And then he got on board with Donald Trump and campaigned for him. And why did he do that? Because he knew that Donald Trump was going to be in power, I think, and that if he wants an audience, this is what he's going to have to do. But I think now he's also making a calculated decision, which is that he's not going to be in power forever. The midterms are around the corner. And then it's like 2028 time, right? Like the presidential election's about to start in a year. So my guess is that that's why they're making these decisions. And I think it's problematic for Donald Trump, but he's not running again either. So
like, yeah, he probably doesn't. Probably why his information diet has changed, because he doesn't give as much of a shit anymore about sort of what people are saying about him. So he's more cloistered. He only gets good news. He only accepts good news from his loyal circle of advisors. And I do wonder how it's going to play out in that, like, you know, if you look at polls, Tucker Carlson's favorability with Republicans has gone way down since he's broken with Donald Trump. So most, you know, Trump voters probably take Trump's side over Tucker's. But there's clearly a faction there that is noisy and growing and necessary for whoever wants to be president next on the Republican side. And it will be interesting to see how that plays out as we get into the 2028 primaries on the Republican side.
If Tucker were chasing away his audience on YouTube, right, by saying these things, he'd stop saying them.
Right.
I think if Megyn Kelly were losing audience because she was speaking out against Donald Trump and the Iran war, she would probably shift her editorial.
Yeah.
The fact that they are doubling down, tripling down on it, to me suggests that the audience is responding positively to it. Mm. And that's why they're saying these things. And you know, the audience that consumes right-wing media is the same audience that votes in Republican primaries. I've been saying this forever. Like, if you want to know where the Republican Party is headed, stop, like, listening to random congressmen on the Hill. Like, they don't control the Republican Party.
Right.
Like, Sean Hannity, Mark Levin, Tucker Carlson, Megyn Kelly, Candace Owens even these days, right? They control the future of the Republican Party. They're the ones who vote in GOP primaries. And so, you know, I don't know what to actually, I don't put much of stock actually in these polls that say Tucker versus Trump. Like, I don't really, that's not going to be a choice. And I think Tucker Carlson's popularity is actually really high in the Republican Party. He's a very popular figure. If he walked into like a Republican dinner, I don't think he would be booed.
Yeah.
I think that people would want to take his photo. So like, that's just my take as an observer of this whole thing. So we'll see what happens, but they're making calculated decisions. And I'm assuming it's based on some data from their audiences.
Tucker said something else the other day that sort of stood out at me. Said, I think Trump is the last Fox News viewer. I'm so grateful every day that I got fired. Tucker likes to exaggerate, lots of hyperbole. But do you think he's directionally right in where Fox's ratings are going? And like, what's going on at Fox as they see a lot of their former stars going independent, media splinter? Like, what's going on there?
I think Fox is still enormously powerful. They have a huge, I mean, they post huge ratings. Like, it's just wild. Like, they just crush everyone else in the ratings, right? They're competing against broadcast channels, not cable channels in the ratings. That said, I think it's clear the energy has shifted away from Fox into the independent podcast creators. And, you know, it's rare, like, just think about, like, when was the last time you saw a headline about what Sean Hannity said on his program?
I know, it's like he disappeared.
It's like he's gone. Like, he's on Fox every night, right? Yeah. Like, he's saying this, but no one's paying attention. You see headlines every day about what Megyn Kelly said, about Tucker Carlson or Candace Owens said, about what Ben Shapiro's even saying. Even like Nick Fuentes, the white supremacist, gets more attention, you know, in the zeitgeist, if you will, than it seems like Sean Hannity is these days. And so like they're speaking to a large audience, but I think there's something about like the momentum has moved to a new medium. And I think also Fox recognizes it because they acquired Red Sea Ventures, which is this company that does a lot of the business strategizing for people like Megyn Kelly. And so they understand they need to be in the creator space, but that's where the energy is these days. And that's where I think a lot of young people are also listening and getting their news. So the younger conservatives are not watching Fox News in the same numbers as they are listening to, you know, Tucker or Ben Shapiro in their ears.
Yeah. One hopeful development in all this is that independent media is genuinely thriving. One person can now build a real business on subscriptions and a direct line to an audience. You've done this with Status. But also people are being pushed toward the same paywalled premium model. What do you think that does to the landscape? Because do you see independent newsletters as a real structural alternative to billionaire-owned media? Or do you think that the potential audience of mostly higher-educated, higher-income subscribers is just smaller and more niche?
I mean, I think we worry about this a lot. I think it's problematic that only, you know, it seems like wealthier Americans can now support or can now afford to consume good information.
Yeah.
A lot of the information that's free on the internet is bad. And if you want good information, whether from like independent sources like Status or like the New York Times or the Journal or the Post, wherever it is, you have to pay for it now. You have to have a subscription. Even places like CNN.com, which used to be free, are now moving to the paywall, right? And so I'm worried about what this is going to do to our information environment. And I think advertisers really, like the model that had worked for so long is an advertiser-supported model where the advertisers ate the cost of the, you know, journalism to produce. And they are so skittish these days around being, about putting their brands next to news. And I think that's problematic. I think that it'd be nice if more advertisers had a backbone and said, you know what, we actually think journalism is important in society and we want to put our brand next to journalism. But these days they want to be around fun stuff. They want to be around sports. Everything has been polarized and politicized. And for them, I think, you know, let's say running an ad on a news network could be perceived as being anti-Trump, right? Because the news is not typically positive for him. And so they don't want to alienate, you know, half the country. And so they just shy away from that. And I think that's problematic. It would be certainly easier for people to build robust journalism businesses if they could count on advertiser support. But because advertisers have gone either to the big tech companies or just skittish around being next to news, it's forced a lot of organizations to say, okay, well, we now need to turn to readers to support our businesses because journalism is really expensive to produce. High quality information is not free. And that's an issue. And I also think maybe people in our country need to understand that journalism does cost money to make. And, you know, it's about like the cost of a cup of coffee to, you know, for each week or whatever to support a institution that's doing good work. And no one thinks twice about getting that Starbucks coffee half the time. But if it's like $4 or $5 to support a institution holding the powerful to account, it's like, well, that's so, I can't afford that, right? Yeah. And I think that the attitude around news from the public needs to also shift a little bit.
It's really tough because I do think about that equal access problem a lot and a future where there, and there already is, but where there's an even deeper divide between people who consume news and consume good news, news that is well reported and fact checked and all that, and then everything else that's just slop on the internet. And some free stuff that's still good, but a lot of slop. I worry about it also with AI, because if, you know, it is a good thing that some of these LLMs or a lot of these LLMs can't like, you know, get behind the paywall on a bunch of media outlets. But that also means that when someone goes and asks an LLM a question about news, they're going to scrape from all the slop and all the free stuff. And right now it still works because there's enough free stuff that is good quality journalism. But I do worry about that going forward, too.
I do too. And you know, a lot of the stuff on the internet these days that is free, I mean, it's scraping from Reddit and yep. some of these low quality sites, and it presents it so confidently, like it is actual truth, that you know, I very much worry. I actually hope, you know, OpenAI is striking licensing deals with companies, but you haven't seen Google or some of these other big tech giants do the same. And I find that to be alarming as well. These big tech companies are using the content that news organizations paid for, in many cases, most of the cases, to produce. They're using it to enrich themselves, and they're stealing the content, basically, and they're not even bothering to leave a check at the door. Not great.
You've talked about how another consequence of all this is that everyone is sort of living their own private version of reality because everyone's got their own information environment that is, you know, algorithmically designed just for them. Is there a scenario, to try to end on a hopeful note, is there a scenario where this gets better? Like, what are the prospects for moving back towards some semblance of a shared reality in terms of the news that we're all consuming?
I'm so pessimistic on this, so you asked the wrong person to end on a positive note. I mean, I think what it would take is for people to, you know, particularly people who control the information pipes, to do the right thing, for just everyone just to do the right thing, for like someone like Mark Zuckerberg to say, you know what, fact-checking is actually good to have on Meta. We're going to do the right thing. We're going to have the fact-checking. For Jeff Bezos to say, you know what, we are not going to kowtow to Trump. We're not going to flatter him. We're going to do really strong accountability journalism. For someone like David Ellison to say, you know what, we're not going to change CNN. We're not going to blow it up. Like, I think if a number of people do the right thing, you know, we can fix this. The problem is they're all doing the wrong thing. And I think they've actually learned the wrong lesson. I think one of the things Elon Musk did was teach these people that, like, just don't be shamed by the press and just ignore them and do whatever you want. And whether that's laying off people en masse, whether that's just being a troll on the internet, I think they've all looked at what Elon's been able to get away with and thought, why are we even, what are we doing here? Like, we can just get away with anything. If Elon Musk can get away with all of that and still be the most powerful, wealthiest person on earth and no one challenges him, what we're doing is like tiny. And so I think that people doing the wrong thing has actually had the wrong effect, which is that it's given everyone else cover because they're all saying, well, we're not the only ones doing it. We're not the anomaly here. We're just, You know, all the tech billionaire bros are at the inauguration, right?
Yeah. And one way to avoid being completely reliant on people just doing the right thing is to have this thing called a government that puts in place laws and regulations and rules that everyone has to follow.
And that's also very true.
And incentivizes people to do the right thing that way. So that is one backstop that would be nice to have as well.
I will say, too, the last thing is that we can't control what the David Ellisons and Mark Zuckerbergs do, but I genuinely mean this when I say it, and we talked about it a little bit earlier, is the public can support organizations doing the right thing.
Yep.
So, you know, organizations that are actually living up to their principles and holding power to account, like this stuff, like we do this every day with media, it's not free to do. It costs like money and resources, and we have to pay lawyers and photos and all this stuff because we're doing it the right way. And you guys are doing the same thing. And people can actually make a difference by supporting institutions that align with their values. And I don't think we can underestimate that. In fact, in most cases, what we've seen so far under Trump is it's the everyday person who has risked everything to be out protesting ICE or protesting abuses of government. It's the people who have the most resources, who theoretically have the most protection, who have kowtowed to Trump. Everyone else, the everyday person, has made a big difference. And so I think in the same way with news and the information environment, that's maybe the most positive way to end this.
Yeah, some of us have more than others, but we all have agency here. So it's a good thing to leave people with. Oliver Darcy, thank you so much for joining. Everyone go subscribe to Status. It is for all the reasons we just talked about, and it's also just an excellent newsletter. You learn a lot about the media. So thanks for joining.
Thank you, John.
Take care. Offline with Jon Favreau is a Crooked Media production. Our show is produced by Austin Fisher, Emma Illich Frank, and Anisha Banerjee. Our team includes Delon Villanueva, Mia Kelman, Charlotte Landis, Eric Shute, Rachel Gajewski, and Will Jones, with support from Adrian Hill and Matt DeGroat. Our staff is proudly unionized with the Writers Guild of America East.
So listen, whether you're in the States, across the pond, or somewhere on the other side of the world, we love that you tune into Crooked for US News. But did you know we also have a UK news show? Yes, that's right. It's called Pod Save the UK.
Pod Save the UK is a no-bullshit, unabashedly progressive conversation about politics focused on the issues that matter most to the people of Britain. With all the changes in our government, including the fun revolving door of prime ministers we have here, there's always lots to talk about.
And there's lots of fabulous guests to talk to, journalists, politicians, experts, comedians and activists.
Yeah, we've had great comedians on as well, like Rosie Jones, Stuart Lee, Aisling B. We've also had Tommy Vietor on, who may be our boss.
We still don't know.
We're not quite clear on who our boss is. I thought it might be Tommy Vietor. I thought it might be Jon Favreau. I don't know if it's John Lovett. It's hard to say. It's not clear to us who our bosses are.
Some of our listeners call us irreverent but not stupid.
I object to that. I'm deeply stupid.
Doesn't sound too bad. So look, come check us out. Come join us. Pod Save the UK every Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts.